Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Is it normal to feel really burpy?
Is it normal to have nosebleeds?
Is it normal to have a dead leg?
Is it normal to have loads of saliva?
Is it normal not to feel pregnant?
Hello and welcome to Is It Normal? The Pregnancy Podcast with me, Jessie Ware. We are now at weeks 20 to 22. Congratulations. I hope you're all feeling okay. And if you're not, hopefully we can alleviate some of those worries and delve into some of those symptoms that a lot of you may be experiencing. This podcast follows my pregnancy journey and with the help of some absolutely brilliant experts is here to reassure you and inform you about all aspects of pregnancy and giving birth. In this episode, Kate Richardson, our sonographer, will be back to talk about everything you can expect at your 20-week scan. But first, I'll be catching up with obstetrician and gynaecologist Jess McMicking to talk about some of the symptoms you might be experiencing at this stage in the pregnancy. Thank you for joining me again, Jess.
Thank you for having me, Jessie. It's wonderful to be back.
So I had a funny old, I'm feeling kind of okay. And I had a bit of a funny one where I decided to do my exercise and I was going off to my hospital appointment. I thought, it's a 50-minute walk. It's a beautiful day. I'm going to walk to the hospital for my 20-week scan. And I have been actually starting to use a pregnancy, not like a brace. It looks like a corset, so it kind of feels weird. It's kind of like a support thing. So I thought, because I'd been suffering from a bit of back pain, I'd been recommended to try this. So that day, I decided I didn't want to take it to the hospital. So I walked without it. And maybe I overdid it and it was kind of, you know, a good hour and a half kind of bit strong pace. I was walking with my husband. And obviously when you walk with somebody else who isn't pregnant, you feel like a pug and like a slug that's walking behind them most of the time and panting. So anyway, I walked there and on the way back, I started feeling like I had a real stitch and kind of in my groin area, which I presume, you know, we've talked about round ligament pain a bit, but I've never experienced it in any of my other pregnancies. And maybe I have not been walking that far in the last 20 weeks, but it really like twinged and it kind of lasted for a few days. So I wondered whether I'd kind of pulled a muscle from actually walking, which is quite embarrassing. Is this something normal that can happen with people that have maybe kind of overdone it in exercise, even though it was, you know, a fast-paced walk? Or could it have been something to do with the fact that I wasn't wearing the brace that I'd start, my body, I think, had started quite like this kind of feeling of being really like secure and tucked in? Is this kind of normal to be having these kind of twinges and pains at around 20 to 22 weeks?
Yes, definitely. It's normal to experience any kind of twingy, stitch-like, cramp-like symptoms around this time. In addition, I mean, you can experience this at any time in your pregnancy, mm-hmm. and that's because we know that what's growing, obviously, is your uterus or your womb that contains your baby. And obviously what it's putting pressure on are all those muscles in our body. Mm. So we've got our abdominal muscles on the front side. We've got our lower back muscles, obvious where they lie as well. And then, of course, we've got all those sorts of muscles and our pelvic floor that all connect up the dots. You know, you're doing the right thing by exercising. Of course, that's what we encourage. So, you know, keeping up that gentle walking is really, really important. And these sorts of pains shouldn't deter that. I'd like to hear that you're using a pregnancy belt. Your physiotherapist will be most excited to hear about that. Because obviously what that does in some women is it provides that lower back support that they may not have sort of naturally. Mm. And it can really help, as you said, sort of tuck things in, keep your posture well, and of course encourage you to walk quite comfortably. Obviously, if these pains occurred with any other concerning symptoms, so say, you know, you had a twinge, you know, in your lower abdomen and all of a sudden you started bleeding, or you had some burning with going to the toilet, that's when, yes, of course, that calls for a review by either your midwife or obstetrician.
So, yeah, to talk about these braces. Now, it kind of sounds quite scary when we talk about it like that, but basically it's like a bit of tight material that mine is kind of like a corset where you tighten it in and you can go at three different spaces. So, you know, however big your bump is. And I mean, do you recommend people that even aren't struggling with low back pain? Because I've heard it's quite good to get the baby in an optimal position, but I don't know whether that's necessary at around this time or not. It just feels quite, you feel a bit kind of naked without it now.
Yeah, so it becomes your best friend almost in some circumstances. It's quite a comforting thing, I think, for some women. Now, don't get me wrong, belts, let's talk about this in a few months when it's summertime and it's really, really hot and it may not be so comfortable, or when you're lying on a beach somewhere when we all get to travel. But it can provide and make that comfortable. And in particular, what I found with some women is they like wearing them when they're sitting doing office work. In particular, if they don't have a supportive chair, what it encourages them to do is obviously sit up straight. And I see that we all sort of go and sit up straight in our chairs.
Up straight now.
I'm even contemplating wearing one myself, and I'm not even pregnant. But it does help. And I think in particular, if you're suffering from lower back pain or you want that extra abdominal support, that's something to think about. It's good that they're adjustable, because obviously we know what we don't want is something that's too small and, you know, is uncomfortable as you transform into the number of weeks pregnant. But a lot of these belts come where they can be adjusted quite easily.
Thanks, Jess. Now, going on to the scan, which we'll talk a little bit more about with Kate, the sonographer, but just to talk about it with you, when I had my scan, it was quite long. It was longer, I think, than the 12-week scan. And there was this like slightly worrying moment. There was, I think it was a student sonographer with a more senior sonographer. So, you know, they were taking their time and it was absolutely fine. But there was like a lot of interest in the heart, and it freaked my husband and I out because everyone was being quite silent and they were doing the thing and we were like, oh God, is something wrong with the heart? Is it quite normal for these scans to take a little longer and for them to be really focusing on, I guess, the heart and certain areas? Like, you know, I presume it has to be in quite great detail, this scan.
Yeah, so you are right. The 20-week scan is probably, you know, the longest scan that you'll get. And there's a reason being is what they need to do as either a sonographer or as a fetal medicine specialist is they're looking at your baby in great detail. You know, their job is to go through a checklist of all the anatomical structures of your baby. And as in addition to that, looking at the placenta, fluid, you know, the list goes on. We'll obviously hear from Kate about all the sort of nitty gritty that they look at. But you are right. You know, there's a minimum standard for how many slides they need to take. And with that obviously comes, you know, a large length of time. It's really important that they do a really thorough job with this scan because it's very powerful in helping, you know, check for anomalies of the baby, which of course are rare, but they can be detected at this point in time, but also making sure that, you know, everything is there to support, you know, the well-being of your baby going forward in the pregnancy.
So, and we'll hear a little bit more from Kate about that scan. Now on to some other symptoms that may be happening or things that are happening with the baby. Some symptoms that I have been accused of, I don't know if it's actually happening because I'm asleep, is my husband says, I am snoring like a trooper. And he said, I mean, I do feel really congested, which I know we've talked about before. Like you can kind of get quite a lot of like sinusy stuff. But yeah, snoring like a trooper, especially he said when I'm on my back, which I know I shouldn't necessarily be on my back and I'm sleeping. So I said, when I'm on my back, you need to like shove me. He was like, I didn't want to wake you up. I said, well, shove me. But yeah, why do people start snoring during pregnancy. What is going on there?
I've heard of that from women as well. I mean, there was only one yesterday that partner did the same thing. He was sort of like, oh, you've started snoring now. You know, this is not you. You know, is there something wrong? Look, I don't think there's any scientific evidence to connect, you know, why it is that pregnant women snore more. But I personally think it would be a combination. So you've drawn out that unfortunately, you know, at times you're sort of resting on your back. And as we know, you know, when you're on your back, you know, what can happen is your respiratory structures get a little bit lazier. And that's why indeed that we can start snoring. Of course, if you've highlighted, you know, there's no harm done, but obviously sleeping in on your side and either left or right side does carry its benefits. And that's what we encourage, especially later on in the pregnancy. I guess the other thing to think about is, you know, what changes are going on in the body. And it may be that one day we identify that it's something to do with the hormonal changes. I don't know. But it is something that does occur and you're not alone. And I mean, I don't think there's any treatment for it per se. But what you may find is if you change that sleep position, that may help calm down the snoring.
I mean, there was one point where I actually did wake myself up with a like almighty snore, and I was like, wow, this is a situation that I hope really stops.
This is new.
After this baby is out of my tummy. So on to some other people's symptoms. So the first voice note we've got is from Aoife. She's actually 18 weeks, but I presume this could apply at any time of pregnancy, and it's about nosebleeds.
Hi, my name is Aoife. I'm about 18 weeks pregnant now. It's my first pregnancy. Generally, have been feeling pretty good. Haven't had any morning sickness or didn't have any of my first trimester, which was a surprise to me actually, because I get car sick just going down the road. So that was quite a relief. The one symptom I have had, which is a bit weird, are nosebleeds. So yeah, I'd be interested to know what that's about and if it's common. Thanks very much.
Yeah, so nosebleeds, it's a really common thing. And I think, as you pointed out, Jessie, it can happen at any stage in your pregnancy. Why it occurs, there's a number of different mechanisms. So it's safe, you know, there's no harm in a nosebleed. Of course, what we want to make sure that the nosebleed does end at some stage. That's probably the priority, is making sure that your nosebleed settles down. The reason it does happen is what they say scientifically is there are some hormonal changes that can affect, I guess, the mucosal lining of the nose and predispose sort of a little bit of a bleed. Now, we know in a non-pregnant state, you know, sometimes with a significant nosebleed, it can be associated with a blood disorder or low platelet levels. In pregnancy, it's really unlikely that that's the cause. It really is, especially for these subtle, although it may be a new thing to your body. But more commonly, it's a benign or non-scary symptom of pregnancy that can happen quite commonly. I guess the most important thing, though, in saying is if you are having nosebleeds, it is worthwhile mentioning at your antenatal appointment, and that can be either to your obstetrician or midwife, because what they can do at the time is assess, you know, when they come on, you know, are these significant nosebleeds? Is it something that we do need to investigate with the blood test to ensure us that things are okay with your platelet levels? And then, of course, it's going through that check. It's rare that I've seen a nosebleed that just keeps going and going and going. But obviously, if you are in that instance, it is worthwhile presenting to your local hospital because there are ways that we can do medically to stop the nosebleed.
Thanks, Jess. Yeah, it's funny because actually, now that I think about it, I mean, I haven't had like full-blown nosebleeds, but there's definitely been blood up there coming out when I'd blow my nose. And that's become quite a common thing around this time, actually. So yeah, you're not alone, Aoife. The next message is from Ellie, who's 20 weeks.
Hello, my name is Ellie and I am pregnant with identical twins. I wanted to discuss a couple of symptoms that I've had in this pregnancy, actually. And the first one is incredibly sensitive nipples to the cold. It's something that I actually had in my first pregnancy as well, because this is my second. And it completely takes over me. It's like they are either on fire or that they are about to snap off. It's unbearable at times, but I've managed to find a couple of ways to relieve it. And both ways makes me look totally crazy. I have been known to come home after a walk and rub my nipples against the radiator, which actually seems to be the best solution currently because it warms them up the quickest and makes them very quickly not feel like they're on fire. And also, I did ask my partner once to put them under his armpits to keep them warm, because he has incredibly warm armpits. Well, he's incredibly warm-blooded, and I don't think quite understands my pain when it comes to these nipples. But has anybody else had this before? Because I really remember having this also in my first pregnancy about 8 or 9 years ago. And I need to really remember never to get pregnant over winter, because it just is excruciatingly painful and makes me look like a crazy woman.
The other symptom that I'm having with this pregnancy is incredibly low sex drive. It's one of those things that I was reading up a lot about it in my first trimester, and loads of people were saying, don't worry, in the second trimester, everything will be absolutely fine. And yeah, I was kind of expecting this wave of just randiness, and that never came. I feel like now I have very, very, very small pockets of being up for it. And unless me and my partner jump, then it will just be gone for the rest of the evening. So God bless him. He deserves a bloody medal these last few months. But yeah, any tips for how to comfortably have sex when you feel like you are a whale unit? Sometimes it just feels like the babies are just going to and fro, and it completely throws me off.
There's a lot to unpick there. Ellie, I really appreciate you getting in touch and saying these things, because I, girl, don't feel bad. Don't give the guy a medal. He's fine. You are growing two humans. You're allowed to do what you bloody want. And if you fancy jumping him at 3 in the morning and that's when you want to do it, I'm sure he'll say yes. That's my advice. But that isn't medical or sound advice. But Jess, over to the obstetrician expert.
Oh, Ellie, I don't know what to say either. I'm with you, Jessie, on that advice. Okay, let's start first of all with the cold nipples. So actually what you're describing is a phenomenon that we call nipple vasospasm. So it's common. What it's all to do with your circulation. So what you've rightly so pointed out is at the moment your nipples have been starved of blood, and that's why you're feeling this cold shooting type sensation. You know, they're on the periphery of your body. And you said, you know, rubbing up against the radiator, you know, underneath your partner's armpits, that helps it, because that's obviously heating it up. What we find is this sort of nipple vasospasm. It more commonly occurs in breastfeeding, but it can affect women's pregnancies. It can be associated with women of a lower weight, because they may typically have poorer circulation, or you might be known to have poorer circulation. So especially those people, you know, who are outside their pregnancy, you know, experience cold fingers or cold toes in winter. You know, it might be that you are one to have these nipple type symptoms in your pregnancy. It's definitely not harmful. It doesn't mean that you can't breastfeed once you have your baby, but it's just something that your body's doing. And what you've just got to do is find a solution, whether it is rubbing up against the radiator or not. Whatever it is for you that works, go for it. Another tip might be to massage your nipples as well. And I mean, I don't think you will look silly unless you do it in a public place, but it's definitely something you can do to help overcome.
Oh, Ellie, man, I feel sorry. I feel sorry for her, because that they're such a sensitive place as it is, to have that discomfort. I feel for you, girl.
Yeah, definitely. Then moving on to the low sex drive. Now, it is really interesting. What they actually quote in NCT classes, for those that may have attended, is 20% of women actually say they have a lower libido in pregnancy. I know that might make you think you're one of five rather than four or five, but it is something that affects women. And this is obviously something that affects, you know, women in different ways. What we have to remember with sex drive is it's not only your body changes, but it's everything in the mind as well. So there's two things that can be going on. And it's something that you, once having a think about it, you might be able to connect yourself with one side of it. So from a physical point of view, some women just don't feel themselves when they're pregnant. You know, it might be a combination that they're growing, you know, bigger in size. They may be experiencing side effect symptoms of pregnancy. So it might be the nausea and vomiting. It may be the nipple pain. It may be a whole combination of things, and you just don't feel yourself physically. And that can really have an impact on your, you know, sex drive. What we also know within our bodies, lots of hormonal changes that we can blame on as well. So, you know, we know in pregnancy there's fluctuations of, you know, not only the pregnancy hormone, but your female hormones as well. And that can affect your sex drive, or, you know, you wanting to be intimate with your partner. how to go about it. And I think this is really, it's a hard one. So what is reported in, I guess it's hard to do a really valid scientific study on this because it's all based on perception and how women feel. But what is reported in the majority of women is actually as they progress in pregnancy, things become easier. And I think that's really something to take on board. Yes, you might at the moment go, oh, I just don't think I'm ever going to get my sex drive back. But you may find as once you hit the third trimester, you know your baby or your babies in your circumstance are growing well, things are healthy, you've adjusted to your body. Actually, you may find that your sex drive returns. It's all to do with the acceptance of the body, but also, I guess, physically, we've got to understand that, you know, the body just may not feel like, you know, being sexually intimate, and we have to listen to ourselves. You know, don't feel bad. Your partner will understand. And, you know, I think that's the main thing going forward is just be comfortable in yourself and things will get better.
I have to like also add, Ellie, if this is any kind of reassurance, I mean, my husband's lucky to have sex at the best time. I mean, basically, I have sex with him when I want to have a baby. So, like, I mean, the poor sod, but not the poor sod. Anyway, what I would say, Ellie, is I don't know if this is something that other women and people are experiencing. I feel like I am feeling the most kind of sexual in my dreams where my husband plays no role in that dream. And like, so I'm having a fantastic time dreaming, but maybe not necessarily doing the physical interaction. But I don't know if that's like a common thing for women to experience as well.
I think some women actually find the pregnancy quite arousing. And that's what we notice, you know, everyone's, I guess the way in which they'll undergo their own sexual pleasure will change. And it can be, you know, a time that couples, believe it or not, try new sexual positions, you know, change the way in which they have their sexual activity. So it may be that they explore a different avenue rather than the routine type sexual activity they used to be engaged in. So yes, you are, you know, you're not silly, you know, using your dreams as a way to, you know, gain your pleasures. That's completely fine.
I'm out of control of that. It's like I'm dreaming. You know, Bridgerton did things to me that my husband has not done things to me.
Bridgerton's done lots of things to everyone.
Bridgerton, I feel like, anyway, what I'm saying is that, like, I think personally, I'm definitely having less, nearly zero amount of sex and not feeling that up for it at all. And I'm sure there's many women in that position. And maybe there's other women that are having, you know, loads of sex and good on you on either way. But yeah, I definitely found that my dreams have been slightly more racy than usual. Thank you to all these women that have sent messages in. It's so interesting and really helpful to hear from you and to hear your different symptoms, because I'm sure there's other people out there that are experiencing exactly the same, and you may have just helped them feel a little less kind of odd about things. So what's going on with the baby at this point, Jess? I know definitely that I've started to feel, I don't know about patterns of movement, but I've definitely started to engage in the kicks more. I'm feeling them a bit more, but then this is my third time having a baby. Some people may not be feeling that too sensitively yet, but it's feeling a little bit more real now. Like, you can maybe start feeling like you're going to have a conversation and a relationship with them in there. I don't know, it feels like things are happening now.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, at this 20 to 22 week mark, we know that, you know, we're at the halfway point. And so yes, of course, things feel a lot more real. As we will discuss with Kate and the anomaly scan, what we know is we've timed that scan because, you know, your baby has formed all of its anatomical structures now. You know, it is a baby, it's a little one. Movements is an interesting thing because it does vary between women, and that can be based on a whole range of circumstances. So, you know, whether or not one's got an anterior position placenta, what's one's baseline weight, that will affect one's perception of movements. But what we know is between 18 and 24 weeks, the majority of women will start to feel their baby move. And it will differ if you ask all of your friends, you know, oh God, I haven't felt it yet. Someone will say, oh yes, but I have. And as I said, it does vary. What you will feel is, as you pointed out, Jessie, is not that regular type pattern of movement that's more classic of the third trimester, but the baby will start to make little flutters or, you know, give you signs that there's something growing on the inside. what they recommend, and this is, you know, according to our national guidance, is if by 24 weeks you haven't felt your baby move, then yes, that's when you should, you know, point out to your midwife or obstetrician. And what they can do is arrange for you to have a scan or an ultrasound to check on what's going on. It's great during that 20-week scan because actually, you know, the fact that it takes so long is that you'll see your baby move and you actually might then correlate, oh, I can see it move. Oh, I'm feeling something on my tummy. Oh, I'll connect the dots. That's my baby. And that's a really helpful tool because that will help, you know, guide what it is that you're feeling on your lower abdomen in the weeks to come.
Thank you, Jess. That's been really eye-opening as usual. And I really appreciate you speaking to us at 20 to 22 weeks.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jess. And thank you to the women for their honest questions as well. It's really good to cover all these topics. And I'm sure a lot of women out there will continue to provide us with some great questions.
Absolutely.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So I loved speaking to the sonographer, Kate Richardson, so much at 12 to 14 weeks that I decided to bring her back for the 20-week scan, which is a little different from your 12 to 14-week scan. So Kate, thank you so much for coming back. And please tell us what the 20-week scan entails, what you're looking for, what's the kind of really defining moments or points that you're looking for as a sonographer at the 20-week scan.
Hi, Jessie. Thank you for having me back. It's nice to come and speak about the 20-week scan as well. So at the 20-week scan, it's called the anatomy or the anomaly scan. So what we're going to do is we check baby in lots of detail. There's about 30 checks that we do to do with baby's anatomy and development and also other structures related to the pregnancy. So like we did at the 12-week scan, we'll have a look at baby's head and brain, but there'll be much more development. So there'll be a cerebellum, which is the hind part of baby's brain. It's the part of the brain that's responsible for balance and coordination, and it'll be a nice dumbbell shape. Then we check the ventricles of the brain and many other structures within the brain. We then work our way down and we look at the little lenses on baby's eyes and then baby's lips, so we can check for cleft lip and cleft palate even at 20 weeks. And again, once these things are normal, they remain normal because that stage of embryological development, it happens much earlier on. So we look at baby's profile as well, and we check that the chin and the nose and all of these other structures of the face all look nice and healthy and normal. And like with the earlier scan, just the sign of baby's face looking normal, it really reassures us about chromosomal conditions and things like that. Then we work our way down and we look at the nice four-chamber view of baby's heart. So we check that there's two ventricles and two atria, and the heart's working in the way that it does on a little baby at that stage. So they have a single circulatory system and the blood all pumps around. So we check that there's no little holes in the heart, and we check for the plumbing of the heart as well. So we check that all the blood vessels come off and go in the right direction. We then continue our little journey down. I tend to describe that when you're scanning, baby's like a little loaf of bread when you go down slice by slice for a little baby, looking at the anatomy at each stage. Because it can be quite difficult when you're watching an ultrasound scan to figure out what a sonographer's doing.
Yeah.
It's much easier when you're driving the machine. So So then it'd say, have a nice little look at the heart and then check the stomach again, like we did at the 12-week scan. So we check that the stomach's below the diaphragm and that it's filled with all that amniotic fluid. By this stage, baby's drinking the amniotic fluid, but actually tasting it as well. So they can tell if you've had something particularly sweet or tasty or nice. So you can start to see what baby's taste buds are like. So once the fluid goes from the stomach down, it filters through the kidneys. So we check the kidneys and check the tubes coming off of the kidneys. Then we check the bladder and then baby pees it back out and drinks it again, as we said before. Not very glamorous. So then we can also look at baby's spine in lots of detail. So we check that all the spine's developed and there's no sign of spina bifida or anything like that. We look at the beautiful little outstretched hands again, the humerus, the radius and ulna, in case you're playing Trivial Pursuit this weekend and want to know your anatomy. And then we look at the femurs and the tib and fibs, which are all the bones in the leg, and check that the feet and ankles all align. So all of these things just build up a healthy pattern of growth and development for a baby. And by 20 weeks, baby's got everything pretty much. It just needs the finishing touches over the next 20 weeks, like a little bit of nice little chubby fat. And then the synapses and everything in the brain all develop more throughout that time as well. So baby doesn't use their little lungs at 20 weeks. That's only once baby's born. But all of the general anatomy of baby we can check at 20 weeks. We also check the placenta to see if it's up out the way of the cervix. If it's not up out the way of the cervix, which is a sort of the exit route for baby, then we might organise for you to have another ultrasound scan at 36 weeks just to check that the placenta's moved up out the way. The NHS use 36 weeks as that stage to check that the placenta's moved up out the way. But if you did have... I know none of us are really travelling at the moment, but if you did have an international engagement, such as a best friend's wedding, and you were hoping to fly, you can't get a fit to fly letter if you've got a low-lying placenta, but you could get it checked privately before flying, and then you might still be able to go to a wedding or wherever you'd like to go, because you don't necessarily need to wait to 36 weeks. The NHS just do it then, because if you've got a lot of patients to scan, it's best just to leave it until that stage.
And low-lying placenta is also called, is it called placenta previa?
That's correct, yes. Yeah. So lots of placentas are down near the cervix earlier on in the pregnancy, but they move up out the way. Mm-hmm. And the way I tend to describe it is the womb's like a balloon, and the placenta's like a lump of plasticine stuck inside a balloon. It's not a very glamorous description. And as the womb grows, the placenta grows up out the way of the cervix. So I tend to say, unlike gravity, with placentas, what goes up doesn't come back down. So once it's up out the way of your cervix, it should stay up out the way, which most of them do. But some of them, as you say, they stay low, and that's a condition called placenta previa. And those babies have to come out by a cesarean. So just for the safety of mum and for baby.
Now, what's the kind of most common problems that you will encounter at that 20-week scan?
One of the most common things that we pick up is renal pelvis dilatation. And what that means is there's a little bit of extra fluid in the tubes that run from baby's kidneys down to the bladder. And so the measurement of it, you can see some fluid sitting there. It's the most common thing that we see. And generally what happens is when a baby's born, they'll do some ultrasound scans and a baby might be put on some antibiotics called trimethoprim just to monitor. So it's just kind of a prophylactic. You just in case this condition means something or baby needs a little bit more help or adjustment with it. So it's really common, but it can be a marker for Down syndrome. And in the NHS, we offer lots of screening for Down syndrome. So I would recommend if someone did pick up renal pelvis dilatation at the 20-week scan, I wouldn't go into a panic and worry that there were conditions with baby. It's probably just likely to be something that will be treated with some antibiotics. But if you want more reassurance, then look at having a non-invasive prenatal test, which is just a more sensitive test for screening for Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome and Passau syndrome, because then it just means that you can forget about those concerns.
Yeah.
One of the other things that we pick up is ventricular megaly, which is when there's an extra quantity of fluid in the baby's brain. The thing to remember with ultrasound is some of the things that we pick up have relevance and some of them don't. There's a lot of false positives in ultrasound, and there's a lot of markers, and I'm not even sure if I like the term markers, because I don't feel that it's a good indication that if something measured 9 millimetres, it would be normal. But if it measures 10 millimetres, then it's a problem.
Yeah.
So it's really important to understand that when we pick up things on ultrasound, they may be relevant or they might not be relevant. And it might just mean having a bit more input from a fetal medicine consultant, someone who went to school for a bit longer than I did. And just monitoring babies as well. If there are signs or markers that we pick up, it's just keeping a little eye on baby. Some things resolve themselves, some things have no clinical relevance whatsoever, and some things just need a little bit more input.
And do you feel like babies are very aware when the ultrasound's happening? I mean, yeah, you're pushing down, but like, do you find that babies like it or dislike it? Is there kind of, do they react to it?
I don't think that they're aware of it personally. I don't think they have that neurological development. I don't think that they think, oh, I'll go and see what's going on over there. And most of the time they're in a micro sleep. When I was a radiographer before being a sonographer, I used to go and do x-rays for poorly little babies that were up on the special care baby unit. And I used to really notice the difference between a premature baby and a full-term baby with doing the x-ray, because the little x-ray plate would go under their little incubator. Mm. And the premature babies didn't really react to anything or know that much was going on, whereas the term babies were a bit more aware of themselves. And I've kind of always applied that to ultrasound. I just think that those synapses and that thought process isn't particularly there until a bit later on. That's really interesting. So I don't think we'd stress them out.
Okay.
Although I do think some of them are little posers.
I mean, it's everyone wants that like brilliant shot. And actually, if you've got an anterior placenta, it's a bit of a bugger to get that shot, isn't it?
It is, particularly if you want nice 3D pictures later on in the pregnancy, because babies tend to get a bit snuggled into the placenta. It's just another thing in the way. The little physics of ultrasound, it doesn't like travelling through so many things.
So this 20-week scan is potentially going to be the last time you get to see your baby inside, until you hopefully meet them. And so, for the majority of women, this will be the last scan they have, unless you have placenta previa, where you've talked about you'd have another check. Are there any other instances where you would be returning for additional scans?
A couple of London NHS hospitals just provide a 36-week scan.
Oh, right.
Because they've got research fellows, so they're able to do it, which is good, because if we can do this research, we can prove that it would be really beneficial, hopefully, to do a 36-week scan for everyone. Some people, such as people who have multiple pregnancies, have serial growth scans at 28, 32 and 36 weeks. But also people who develop conditions such as gestational diabetes, or people who have underlying health issues, or people at a higher incidence of preeclampsia, they might have extra ultrasound scans. Also, when the midwife does the assessment, as you probably remember yourself, they do the measurement with a tape measure. They measure the fundal height. And if that doesn't measure in centimetres what you should be measuring in weeks, and the midwife's concerned about the growth, they might refer you for an extra ultrasound scan. Most of the time, the ultrasound scan shows that everything's actually perfectly normal. I probably actually scan about 3 ladies a day for growth scans, and the fundal height measurement has been off, too big or too small, and I measure the babies and they're perfect. But obviously, it's a bit more accurate doing a scan than it is doing the fundal height measurement. So if that happens to you, don't go into a panic. Just think, oh, good, I get to meet my little item again. So. And when we do that, we measure baby's head, tummy and the thigh bone, and then the amniotic fluid around baby. We check the position of baby. That's very important. That could be another reason as well why someone might have a growth scan later on in the pregnancy. When the midwife palpates, if she thinks that baby's breech, meaning head up rather than head down and all ready for the exit, they might send you for another scan just to double check that.
Kate Richardson, been an absolute pleasure to talk to you about the 20-week scan. Thank you so much for your time, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jessie. It's so nice to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you found that useful. And thank you so much to Jess and Kate for their insights. In the next episode, we'll cover weeks 22 to 24 weeks of pregnancy. Subscribe to the podcast, like it if you like, and share it amongst your friends. And we'll see you very soon. Take care. Lots of love.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.